Blog Talk Radio.
No, it is playing.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
You calling now?
Great. I got somebody on the phone already. Who's this? 3431. Last four.
Okay. Well, I'm back again. I hope everybody can hear me, because this Windows 11 is a mother. I've had so much trouble trying to get things going. I look. First of all, when I transferred from Windows 10 to Windows 11, I lost all my programs. I had to add programs in, so I don't even know where I'm at. I don't even know if anybody can hear me. But anyway, and then I got to tell you the story why I haven't been on for almost a year and a half. It's because I've had so many problems with my knees. It is unbelievable. Oh, let's see. Someone's calling in already, and I'm trying to figure out who that is. Let me turn it. I'm redoing my. Let me turn this down. What is the story here? Okay. Now, let me see who this is right away before I start. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Friday, March 1st, 2024, and we're in a political season like no other political season. Now, that's to start off. We'll get back to it. I want to thank everybody for listening. I know I haven't been on in a long time. I'm just running off my mouth because I got so much to talk about. I do not know where to start. But we're going to start. I got a couple of calls in here. Let me find out who these people are. Hello, who's this? Hello? Can you hear me? Don't know. Hello, who's this?
Hello?
Yes, so that's you. Blake. Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is Blake.
917. Well, hold on a minute, Blake. Yeah. Who's last four is 3431? Phone number.
That's me.
Donnie?
Oh, Sugar Man. This is Sugar Man.
Oh, Sugar Man. Okay. Sugar Man. Well, hold on a minute, Sugar Man. Hold on. I got people calling in off the rack here. We found who the other person is. Hold on. Hello? 4294. Who's the last four? Last four, phone number, 4294. Who's that? 646 area code. Okay, well, you just want to listen, that's fine.
646.
Okay. Oh, You know, Donnie, is that you?
What's the last? This is me. Yes, this
4294.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. All right, got you three guys on. All right, let me explain something first. Guys, I don't know if – I hope this is being recorded. I don't know. They have a whole new process of doing things here at Blog Talk Radio. And I'm going to announce something later on that's going to make things a little more confusing. But anyway, I'm glad to be back, and I want to tell you something. My health will be a whole show in itself, so I won't do it here. But I wanted to give 3 minutes to talk about some things that are going on with the health. You got to remember, you need to have your health checked all the time because you don't know when you're going to be here and not be here. It could be overnight. Overnight. I mean, I'm talking about overnight. My knees went from good to garbage. And I had a one knee replacement. My knee replacement went great, and I was out catching ground balls with my grandson 5 weeks later. When I had my second knee replacement, it was a killer. For a year and a half, my knee was killing me, even when I was on the air. Finally, I had to stop. The pain was so bad. That's the reason why you haven't heard me on the air. And it's now sore. Sometimes it's sore as hell, especially when it rains out there. Now, that's expected. But I had 5 blood clots in the leg after the operation, which was not expected. Anyway, we'll go into that later. But right now, I want to talk about some sports first. Mr. Blake, yes, hello?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, Blake,
yeah.
Tell us about what's going on in basketball.
All right. Well, first off, I'm a big Lakers fan. I'm a LeBron fan. I don't have a team.
No, he has a person.
I follow LeBron.
Wherever he goes.
He follows LeBron, right. Nobody but him follows LeBron.
Watching other players. I do enjoy watching other players because I will admit LeBron does slack off. I'm not a Curry fan.
He's 90 years old.
He's capable of trying his best. He just doesn't try.
Yeah, shit. So is Will Chamberlain. So is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. From his couch.
Oh.
So, Mr. Sugarman, can you tell us, is LeBron able to do it?
Do what?
Well, he ain't playing football. What's he's playing basketball. Is he able to do it for a full season?
I don't think any of these guys are able to speak on playing a full season. 82 games plus the playoffs. I mean, the physicalness of the game may not allow you to play all of those games. You know, these guys are hitting the floor and being hit by other players. And there are no fouls being called. It's a very unusual situation to expect any of these guys to play a full 82 games, any of them, to play a full 82-game schedule and play the playoffs all the way through from April until June and not be affected by the physicalness of the game.
Yeah,
so
but
I can't say anything about – hey, you got to let me finish. The idea that anybody thinks that that's possible, well, my hat's off to him. But I doubt very seriously, forget about it being James, anybody, pick anybody. I don't think they can play 82 games plus the playoffs from April until June and not be a physicalness and the longevity of the game.
Even when you're getting paid $10 million a game?
I have no way to argue anything about the money. You asked me, was a player in the NBA capable of playing all these games? And I'm telling you, I don't think anybody should expect that.
Well,
that's
if I was a coach, he'd be out there on one leg. Don't pay him that much money. I mean,
the days of that happening is over.
Is over.
They're not Oscar Robertson's. They're not Elgin Baylor's. They're not Bill Russell's. And all those guys are gone. Their legacy lives, but those guys are gone. And the whole idea behind playing basketball in the NBA has changed. You can't even say 180 degrees, but it has totally changed.
Yeah, that's the health protocol. You can't even do that. It'd be illegal.
Well, I'll tell you. That's the case. He said that having them play 182 games on crutches is illegal anymore.
I meant the game has evolved more than 180 degrees from the way it was in the 60s, 70s, and possibly the 80s.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It's evolved from the early 2000s, in my opinion.
There you go.
1999, 2000, 2001, you've seen a major change.
There you go.
Just off of everything, just the way they play, the coaching, everything.
Absolutely.
Well,
the entire attitude, the attitude going up and down the court has changed. You know,
is that true, Mr. Donnie Black?
What's that? I'm gonna tell you who changed the game. First of all, I'll say this over and over again: players don't change the game. Coaches and owners and everybody else change the game. It's no longer sport; it's entertainment. And they want to put the best entertainment out there. Michael changed it because all of a sudden, because Michael was making $3 million a year when he signed a contract for like 30 mil. And then now it's entertainment and making money. It's not getting hurt. Now, these players back in the day, they played for, $30,000 a year. They played all-star games. They played championship games. They didn't worry about getting hurt. But these guys are like pieces, they're inventory. You can't afford to get them hurt. You can't touch them. You think these players keep saying they could play back in there? No, you can't. But first of all, I'm not bragging, nobody's going to score over 30 points on me because I'm going to foul out before he scores 30 points. But these guys can't be touched anymore because –
I don't think that's the player's fault.
Hold
What's
up.
That? You don't think it's the player's fault?
I think the players could play back in the 80s, in the 90s. I do.
You think the players back in the 80s, they do what?
I think
they don't want to get hurt,
They sure don't.
But like I said.
So they don't push themselves then.
Well, they don't want to get hurt,
Yeah, but
I mean,
if
they
you don't
signed,
want to get hurt, that
signed,
means you don't want to win the game, really, without getting hurt.
They don't want to win the game?
I don't think that's what it is.
If you got Shaq in the middle, guarding, you don't want to go down the middle and get smacked in the face by Shaq. So
what does it got to do with
you shoot a jump shot. Even though you can't shoot jump shots.
So I understand what you're saying. You're comparing two eras.
Yeah, well, all right.
So you're saying guys are getting hurt. I mean, they're not playing. I heard a guy had a sore knee. Guy had a sore knee and didn't play. Now, I mean, I like Leonard, but they didn't sign him to a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out half the season almost. It's entertainment.
So it's not about basketball anymore. It's about
entertainment.
How many people you can put in the seats because you can entertain them.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying?
Just look who's in the front rows of all these people. Next time you look at the crowd, look at the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
half of them don't know a damn thing. They don't know a damn thing
about basketball, right?
About basketball, they come there to be seen, mm-hmm. and that's it. It's not about basketball; it's for the rich. It's not for the common man anymore.
Yeah,
for
well, what's the average price of the tickets that are really going sky high? What's the tickets price go for?
Well, they $2,000-$3,000 down there on courtside, which are the worst seats. Courtside is the worst seats because you can't see.
But they know down on the courtside you'll be seen on television.
Well, it's better on television because you can see the other side. I mean, sometimes you don't want to listen to the commentary because they don't know what the hell they're talking about half the time. That was just like on that foul with against the Knicks. The announcer said, well, he couldn't call the foul because he didn't have the ball. The guy put a body block on him.
Well, why do you think they have announcers like that? Well, don't they have a lot of former athletes that are announcers?
It's entertainment.
Yes, it brings viewers in that are listening. When you say something crazy on TV, it catches everyone's ears. Oh, you said something crazy.
Yeah, they're part of entertainment.
You know, there's always people like that to say crazy stuff for attention.
And I know mostly, but Walt Frazier announces, I mean, he's old school. But Walt tells you like it is. If the Knicks make a mistake, he'll tell you. He tells you. He knows what's going on. You have to play the game. He's got, you know, slowing down for having played the game.
Yeah.
But,
okay. I have a question for you.
What I've talked to friends of mine. Sorry.
So who are some of your favorite announcers for basketball as of right now?
Me? Bream was.
Yeah.
I like Walt, maybe because he's old school, but I like Walt Frazier. I hate Doris Burke, and Bream is beginning. You know, he's beginning to talk a lot. You know, like giving his opinion and so forth. I hated the Van Gundy's. Oh, man, I hate it.
Why is that? Not because of
his
coach.
Because he's too opinionated. He's supposed to be calling the game. He said, I think they should change the game. They should do this. They should do that. Basketball has survived 78 years without your opinion. So, I don't want to hear that. I want you to call the game. Half the time, they're not calling the game. They're talking about something else, and something else is happening on the TV, and they're not paying any attention. They think everybody wants to hear what they have to say. So,
right.
Well, that's the reason why they say it's entertainment. He says it's entertainment. So a lot of times during basketball games, the guys going out shooting jump shots at air balls and whatnot. They think the people don't want to see that, so they want to fill in. They think that's good for them. If they
do, Charles and Kenny.
They're getting paid to talk.
Yep, they're getting paid to
they're
talk.
They're not paid to.
Not getting paid to talk about the basketball game. Getting paid to talk in the down times.
In general, yeah.
They talk during the
uptime
regular
too.
Time.
Well, then, what do you propose to them that they should do? How are these new people coming in going to look at basketball, how it's played now, the way it was played when Walt Frazier was playing?
Right.
How do you explain to them? These guys aren't playing for us or the team. They're playing for the TV cameras.
Well, I'll tell you this much. There's a major difference between high school, college, and in the NBA. And you've seen that with Zion Williamson. You've seen a major change. Zion in high school, no one could stop him. He was scoring 20 points a game, 5 blocks. His numbers were crazy.
Well, that's not
allowed. About
points a game? What?
For a freshman, it is.
Oh, freshman, okay.
For a freshman, he was the most talked about high school basketball player in the country.
Right, okay.
Out of nowhere in South Carolina. And then he goes to Duke. He's scoring 20 points a game. He's scoring triple doubles, getting 10 blocks a game. Most talked about player in college at the moment. He was like, I think he went either number one or number two. I can't think right now. Then he goes to the NBA. He gets hurt. He gained 500 pounds. Then he comes back. And he's doing okay, but he's not.
But why
he's
gaining 500 pounds?
Money.
Why He was paid ultra money.
He got paid a lot of money. It was tens of millions. And then he gets hurt.
So why would he gain all that weight?
For Doritos.
Why would he gain all that money? Gain all that weight when he knows that he has to play the game and he can't play
He wasn't at the game. He was home. He was home.
Right.
He was at home eating Doritos, advertising for Doritos and Taco Bell. And he was getting bigger in the commercials. And he comes back. He didn't go to any of the games. While he was out. He was out for the entire season. He didn't go any of the games. Then he comes
so
back to make him lose weight.
So why did he lose the weight before he came back?
I don't know. I don't know. They should have made him do it. He shouldn't have got that big in the first place.
So that tells me that the owners don't care about winning because they already got season tickets sold for 3 years down the road, four years down the road. And,
right.
Correct.
Hey, the owners don't care about winning. Because they would tell him, look, you gained another weight. You ain't coming back when you want to come back. You'll come back when we tell you to come back. And you won't get paid.
$1 million to him.
Yeah, but see, they're probably their contract.
Well, they get too much money up front. Used to be the old days, you had to earn your contract.
Right.
So you had to work out during the off season to make sure you came in camp and that they were
in shape.
But like I said, it's entertainment now. The owners and everybody else, the coaches don't really have any control per se, because see, some people only get to play because I've talked to several friends of mine who did play pro ball. They don't even look at it anymore. They say,
mm-hmm.
But the thing of it is, a lot of these contracts had nothing to do with playing basketball. And that's why some guys don't play. It's like
it's about
certain
the
other guys.
Eye.
No, well, certain guys have to play a certain amount of minutes when they sign the contract. So if a guy doesn't have it in his contract, he's gone. The other guy's going to play.
Hmm.
So like
I said,
it's about business.
Well, I think football's going that way. Basketball's going that way. Baseball is the
last one
left that really hasn't gone that way. The basketball owners got together and said, we're going to have 10 teams are going to be allowed to get in the playoffs. That's ludicrous. 10 teams. How many teams are in the NBA?
Ooh,
32. So 10 teams from each division. No, was it 4 teams from each division? Get in the playoffs?
Something like that, because I know 9 get in from each conference. Or eight or nine.
And how many conferences do they have?
There's
4?
2 conferences. There's the Eastern and Western Conference.
Okay, but in each conference, how many basketball players, how many basketball teams do they have?
15.
So that means there's 10 players with 10 players from each team? Or 4 players from each team?
No, 10 teams. It's 9 teams make it out of the 15.
9 out of 15. So that means they'll have 18 teams playing?
Yes, but it'll break down to, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Right.
That is so ridiculous. You should have 2 teams from each division get in.
Well, 2 teams from each division, that's the bit.
That's how it always was. And you have a 2 teams plus a...
But there's more teams now. There's more teams now.
Right.
There's more teams than there used to be.
But there's a lot. But they've overflowed now with teams. Too many teams are making the playoffs.
Too many teams. And that's why they don't care during the first 30 games of the season.
Right.
Because they could just mess around, goof off, you know.
And they do.
Make it 9 spots. And
they do. See, now in baseball, that's not the case. I think they, even in baseball, they're starting to look that way, but it's ludicrous. They have 2 teams in each division, and they have a playoff, and they have a second-tier team that will make it. 2 teams from the Eastern Division, 2 teams from the Central, 2 teams from Western and Central, I believe it is. I say Central? So that's four teams, and then they have one team overall that's going to make it. I still think that's too many, but it's not like basketball. It's outrageous.
Yep.
They've gone too far. And because they're playing until the middle of summer, practically. When are they going to come back? They're playing for a playoff spot. When's the playoffs begin? In May?
April.
April, okay. And it's over in May.
It's over in June.
Oh, in June. So they're playing, they're playing almost, and then they got to come back in September, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So it's ludicrous. It's all entertainment, right? That's what it is. It's all entertainment.
Yeah.
But, now getting to Donnie's favorite player, LeBron, is he going to play till his son comes into pro basketball? What do you think?
I believe so.
He'll play till his son comes on the Lakers.
Yes, I think they want to play together.
They want to play together.
And they'll accomplish
he'll be 41 when his son comes to
the
team?
His son's a freshman.
You guys are missing the point. His son can't play. Why would you want to draft him?
Because LeBron said so.
And second of all, he's got all the money. And then third of all, boy had a heart attack. Why are you pushing this boy? If my son has a heart attack, no, you sitting down for at least for a while. I'm not having you back out there on the floor.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what his mother thinks about this situation, having her son just after they take him out on a stretcher, on cardiac arrest.
Well, maybe it was mild. I mean, because if he's not approved by doctors, he would not be on the court if he wasn't approved by doctors.
Wait a minute.
LeBron is the doctor.
What was the name? I can't think of the ball player that they said okay to play, and he had a heart attack and died. Gathers, right?
Hank Gathers, right?
And he died, and then they said it was okay. Now, after you see that, listen, I'm pretty sure Mikey wouldn't let you play anymore, Blake, if your mother, if you had a heart attack.
That's right.
And especially, the boy got $7 million already.
Yeah.
See, is Bronny short for LeBron or is Bronny his name? But it's still the same.
Bronny is his name. He changed his name because he didn't want to be associated with his father. meaning he didn't want his name to be, so you're LeBron's son, okay. So we're going to think
so
of LeBron every time
we
think of
you. So he tells the world that his name is Bronny. Jackie Robinson said the biggest mistake he made was naming his son after him.
Junior, right.
To put too much pressure on him.
Right, that's why he changed it.
But he ain't changed it. In other words, what's Michael Jordan's son's name?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Because he kept him out of the limelight. Nobody knows. He played basketball. Who did he play basketball for?
I don't know that either.
Nobody knows because he let his kids be what they were. He's putting too much pressure on this guy, and he's not good. Plus, he's got 7
million. I also believe it's different times, different generations. There's social media now. You can't hide like you could back in the 80s and 90s like you can now.
That's correct.
But
if his son made a social media account, he can't hide. He's going to go viral.
Whose son named Scottie Pippen's son?
I don't know his name, but I know he plays basketball.
Nobody knows. That's what I'm trying to say. It's all about
People know Carmelo Anthony, Scottie Pippen. They all play basketball together.
I understand.
They play against each other.
But they don't know their son. Half of them, notice they didn't name their sons after them. Even though Bronny is not his name, it's still, we know who he is.
It's close.
Well, if I may interject here for a moment, you brought up Scottie Pippen. You do realize that he played in the Summer League last year, and he does call himself Scottie Pippen Jr. Nope.
Yeah, but
that,
nobody
right?
knows that.
But I know, but he played in the summer league last year in Las Vegas. He even made the Laker team to play in the summer league, and that's
okay.
how he described. He named himself, or that's how they named him, or however that came about. He was called Scottie Pippen Jr. That was on his uniform. So all the people who watched him play did know who he was.
But that's after they saw the game. They know Bronny before he played a game.
Because of his father. And
right.
Because of social media. And
right.
He went to the biggest school, the best basketball school in high school. It was like
right.
Sierra Cannon. His popularity is booming right now. It's just I think it's a generational thing because there's so many NBA players kids that are in the NBA. You have Gary Payton, you have Carmelo Anthony's kids in high school. You have all these players, all their kids are playing high school at either college level, but they're not as big as LeBron's kid.
Because his son, in other words. LeBron, I'm sorry, I don't hate him. You know, first of all, I hate the term hate. Criticize, okay. Don't say you hate. I don't hate the man. I just don't like the man because, like I said,
why don't you like him?
I get ready to say, he is Madison Avenue. He is Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue made LeBron. Everything, every time Facebook, LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. When he came out, they decided. They called him the chosen one, and that was when he was nice. He was good. I'm not saying he's not good, but I'm saying they protected. No player wants to foul LeBron where he gets hurt and can't play. If you watch, they don't guard LeBron. He's 40 years old almost. I would guard him baseline to baseline. I won't let him just bring the ball down.
Is that LeBron's fault?
I'm just saying the media, it's the NBA. They're protecting
That's not LeBron's fault.
Me.
It's not like you just don't like LeBron. It's not like you're hating on LeBron.
I'm just saying, I don't think, I think he's getting away with things that other players are not getting away. He's getting pampered.
And that's his fault?
Like I said,
is that his fault?
But he can't
that's
come
not
around.
LeBron's fault.
He can't flex his muscles. And after somebody touches him, he can't flop. Keep flopping. I mean, this is ridiculous. He's got
Why
no
not? Why can't he do it? Everybody's flopping now. Everybody flopping.
Ain't no everybody flopping like him.
Yeah.
Please.
If you watch a game,
Brett,
I guarantee you're going to be at least one
please,
flop.
Please.
If you watch a game, there's going to be one flop.
I don't watch him, like I said. He flops. Everybody says he flops.
Everybody in the NBA flops. Now, the entire NBA is soft. If you watch a game,
nobody flops like
gonna
him.
Be flopping.
But he's
like
the
him.
King.
A flop is a flop. It doesn't matter what it is. A
but
flop
he's
is a flop. A flop is exaggerating a foul.
But if you don't get
There's
touched,
no
you don't
to
get
it.
Touched. You give you call you get flopped because the referees won't call. If I run over you and you still standing, they ain't gonna call a foul. But LeBron,
and you're mad at him because
touched.
Of that, and you're,
he doesn't
you're
get touched.
LeBron because he does that.
This is your man. You grew up with him. I can't deal with him because, like I said, he could have never played in the 80s and 90s. The mere fact that
LeBron
he's
couldn't, or any player in today's generation,
wait a minute,
is
right,
it LeBron
right.
specifically?
Wait, but take it easy, slow down, put it in neutral. He would not play until he's almost 40 if he had to play in the 80s or 90s. That's all I'm saying. Proof that he's playing at 40s is the fact that this league is soft. That's it. But go ahead.
Kobe was almost 40. Kobe, when Kobe was playing, he was in his 30s, late 30s.
He wasn't 40. He was 37 or something like that.
37, 38, 40. I mean.
But he didn't play the 40.
Okay, LeBron's fortunate. I mean, I don't see what
Blake,
I don't see
Blake,
what's
Blake,
the problem
I know
with
you
LeBron.
Love the man. Are you going to take up with him? But, you know, you got your opinion. I got mine. I just think he's baby. Because, like I said, they don't even. It's nowhere in the world. I would let a 39-year-old man bring the ball down. What's his name from New Orleans? He's from New York. He played for Christ the King. He guarded LeBron two times. He came down. He didn't back away from him. He came straight down the middle. He took the ball away from him. That's old school basketball. It's no way in the world you let him come down the middle like he does. If you watch all his dunks, ain't nobody around him. They clear the path. Because, like I said, nobody wants to be the one to hurt LeBron, and he can't play anymore.
I mean, all right.
Well, so what's going to happen with Embiid?
What's going to happen what?
I don't know what's going to happen with Embiid. I don't know what they can do. I mean, he's 7'1". He gets hurt every week in his ankles and knees. I don't know what he can do. I mean, this has been an ongoing problem for a long time. I don't know. I mean, I have no solution. I can't even think of a solution.
Now, who are we talking about? I'm sorry, I missed it.
The Philadelphia 76ers center.
Embiid? Oh, no.
Yeah.
But they're going to sign him, probably.
You're talking about Michael started talking about managing their time, and can players play the entire season and playoffs and all of what they have to do and get through the season without being injured. I think Embiid was one of those guys that might have began his pro career for the first 2 or 3 years injured. I don't
right.
think he played for the Sixers for 2 or 3 years, although he had a contract and was supposed to, well, I guess he was supposed to play, but for 2 or 3 years he didn't play.
Right.
You know, Leonard took the long way out. If you're going to talk about players being, I don't know how you want to put it, being guarded or can't be touched or how that kind of thing is, I don't think any of the quote-unquote what they call the stars of these teams, I don't think they want any of them to be hurt. They'd rather hold them out healthy with a time management thing, because 82 games, playoffs, is hard to get through in the first place. It's just hard to get mm-hmm. through. I can't talk to you about injuries that happened to Oscar or Baylor or Wilt or any of these guys. I can't talk about that. I can't discuss their statistics in that way. But I'm sure there were some guys who...
Sugarman, we can't hear you. Hello, Sugarman?
Sugarman, you there? Hello? Are you guys still there? Hello? Hello?
I'm not muted.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Michael, are you there? Are you there? Can anybody hear me?
Sugarman, I hear you.
I hear you.
Can anybody hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you, Blake.
Yeah, I think it's my grandpa's side. I really think so. Because we all three of us hear each other.
Right.
Okay. Is he there? Michael, are you there?
See, I'm in the other room with him. He's talking to the computer, but none of us can hear him. It's his side.
Okay. Tell him that we can't hear him. And whatever you're doing, you need to stop it. Hello, Michael?
Can you hear me now?
Hello?
One,
you hear me?
No, I can't hear you.
Yeah, I can't hear you. Can you hear me? Hello. Hello.
Yeah,
hello. I think it's you. Can anyone hear me?
Yeah, you tell us who's speaking here. All right.
Well, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
Hello.
I can't hear you at all.
Hello, testing.
Go on. Talk.
Look what it says. You're not connected.
See? I'm not connected. So I was... Oh, no wonder. I can't hear you.
It appears you're calling
back into a live show. We're reconnecting.
Say something.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I hear you.
Okay, finally. 5765, are you there?
I can't hear you anymore.
You can't hear me now?
Mm-mm. Hello.
I can't hear you either.
Direct connect.
I hit that.
I might have to do it all over again because I heard you when you did it.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Reporting
back into a live show. We are reconnecting you now.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Hello. I'm going to leave that tab open.
5765. I hope you're there. Santana, are you there?
I am here.
Finally. I got a bad connection here with Blog Talk Radio because I can't hear you on my headphones. I gotta get you through my computer. Did you hear me all the time?
I could hear you the whole time.
Oh, I couldn't hear nobody. I lost everybody. I don't know why. But anyway, I am glad you waited. I'm glad you waited. Please tell everybody what you're running for.
Great. My name is Satana DeBerry. And I am running for North Carolina Attorney General.
And you are from the glorious town of Hamlet, North Carolina, is that correct?
That is correct. I was born and raised in Hamlet, North Carolina. I am currently the elected district attorney in Durham County.
And one of the questions I want, we have a... I'll give you, well, we got till 5 o'clock, so any time you last that for that whole hour, I don't care. But anyway, what made you run for district attorney, and for attorney general, I should say?
What's making me run for attorney general?
Yes.
Well, I think that the people of North Carolina deserve to have a qualified attorney general who is willing to fight for their rights and stand up against the General Assembly that is really trying to take away the basic rights of our most vulnerable citizens. whether that be reproductive rights, whether that be voting suppression, whether that be environmental issues favoring corporations who would pollute our water and our land, or not protecting seniors from scam artists who would take their money and their homes. And, you know, I really think we need an attorney general who can focus on what is best for the people and not really be focused on their own political career and what they're going to be doing next, so that they're negotiating away the rights of the people. Well, I guess I'm going to keep talking since I can't hear you. I'll just keep going. And hopefully that means people can hear me. I am the most qualified person who's ever run for Attorney General in North Carolina. Literally everything the Attorney General does, I've done in my career. I started my career as an environmental lawyer in D.C. And since then, I have been general counsel of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. So I have worked on issues of reproductive justice, access to health care, mental health. I have worked for Self-Help Credit Union, which provides loans, both commercial and personal, to low-income people and people of color across the country. So I have a background in doing consumer work. I have run Durham County Habitat for Humanity and the North Carolina Housing Coalition. So I have built housing for low-income people. I've worked on housing finance. I have been an expert in front of the North Carolina Public Utilities Commission. So I have represented consumers in ratepayer cases. So when Duke Energy has tried to raise people's rates, I had gone to the commission and worked against that. And so I really spent my 30-year career being a public lawyer representing the most vulnerable people in North Carolina. And I think that is the kind of experience that the people of North Carolina deserve in an attorney general. A little bit about my about what I have done here since I have been the DA in Durham is that we have really worked to focus on the most serious and violent cases while trying to divert from court low-level things, issues where people just come into contact with the criminal justice system because they're poor, they have substance abuse or mental health issues. We want to focus on public safety and not on things that just really get people caught up in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And what that has meant here in Durham is that violent crime is at its lowest in 20 years. And meanwhile, we have done things like restore the driver's licenses of 12,000 of our friends and neighbors who had their driver's licenses revoked because they could not pay fines and fees, not because they had committed any crimes, but just because they could not pay court fines and fees. Oh, you're back.
Yeah, could you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Because I it must be blocked up here. The sound system is all screwed up here. Anyway, but you've done so much. Why would the people in Hamlet want to give you up?
Well, you know, Hamlet is, like many places in North Carolina, places that were once thriving, and now because of policies that our General Assembly has put into place has really moved. People can't afford to stay in those places anymore. They don't have the access to education. They don't have the access to health care. They don't have those places, those rural communities, are really suffering in our knowledge economy. And so people have had to go elsewhere to build the American dream.
And the what you say, your, I understand your daughters are the ones that really got you involved in doing some things about that you that you're talking about.
Well, I, you know, grew up in a family. I grew up in the black church, and I grew up in a family that was very community minded, and so I've always been somebody who's worked on issues in our community, but I've also been able to see really how many opportunities I had in my life that my daughters might not have in theirs, whether that be issues like being able to decide what to do with their own bodies, right, to make their own reproductive choices, whether it is finding a safe, decent, affordable place to live in North Carolina. You know, I have my oldest daughter is a upperclassman at the North Carolina Central University, soon to graduate.
Right.
And, you know, when she graduates, she's going to have a fine, she's gonna have a tough time finding a place that she can afford to live. When I graduated from college, that wasn't a problem. I was a graduate student. I was broke, but I could afford to live someplace. You know, I didn't have to fall back on the hospitality of my mama and daddy. And those opportunities don't exist a lot for young folks these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, the a lot of things have changed since you and I both got out of school. It's not even the same almost not the same country as it was.
It is. It's almost not the same country as it was. We are, again, you know, facing threats to our basic civil rights, issues that we thought had been settled. And that's, you know, that's really why I'm running for Attorney General. Because the law matters. And there, we have never moved forward in this country except through litigation and through battles in the courts and through the courts helping shape our future. And now we're in a situation where things that we thought were decided, like abortion rights, like voting rights, like the ability to marry who you want to, love who you want to, those type of things we thought were settled, and now we're at risk of having those things retracted. And
well,
people in North Carolina deserve better.
Well, what is the main thing that you want to change, that you see you need to be changed when you become the Attorney General?
Well, I think the biggest issue facing North Carolinians right now is reproductive justice. And so we stand in danger of turning into a place like Texas, where they are proposing absolute abortion bans, and they are prosecuting women who miscarry. Or in a place like Alabama, where families no longer have access to IVF because the Alabama Supreme Court has decided that the embryos are children.
Well,
now,
and you're absolutely correct. I don't want to cut you off, but how can that even be realistic when they say embryos are children,
if embryos are children, why don't they have Social Security cards?
It is a baffling decision. It is certainly a baffling decision to, at least to me, as somebody who has been a lawyer now for 30 years and the way I was trained, you know, the decision not to get too technical, but the decision is not even based on the laws of Alabama. The decision is based on the Alabama Chief Justice's interpretation of the Bible.
Well, that's true.
So it's not about the law
How many judges are in the Supreme Court in Alabama?
I'm not sure how many judges are on the Supreme Court in Alabama.
Well, so you're telling me that every one of these judges could say that these embryos are children. Now, every single parent needs to get them a Social Security number. So they're missing time from their Medicare.
Well, you know, we don't even have to. We don't even have to go that far. I mean, we can talk about the children who are born in the state of Alabama who may be in foster care system or who have families and that lawmakers in Alabama don't want to provide health insurance to, don't want to provide mental health services to, don't want to provide living wage jobs to their families, their parents, don't want to provide them with safe, decent, affordable housing to grow up in. It seems like they only care about a baby before a baby's born. And then once a baby's born, then they feel like the state has no more responsibility for that child.
Right. Well, what about here in North Carolina, the judges that we have here? How many judges do we have in state of Florida?
Well, here in North Carolina, we have nine judges on our Supreme Court. Unfortunately, in 2022, the court flipped, and now we have seven Republican judges and only two Democratic judges. And those seven Republican judges are very much like the judges on the Supreme Court in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really care what the law says. They care about care about political issues, which is, you know, when I was in law school, we were taught to pay attention to the law and interpret the law, not to be swayed by the political winds because, you know, politics changes over time. The law is supposed to be interpreted a certain way and within a certain framework. And here in North Carolina, it would be, if we were to have a Republican attorney general, that person would just fall in line with that Supreme Court and with the General Assembly. They wouldn't push back on anything. And so not only would we see a total ban on abortion, we would see voter suppression laws that the court refuses to overturn, even if they do violate our constitutional rights. We would see a rollback of health care access already in North Carolina. In many rural communities, people have to drive an hour or so just to get primary care. We would see that change. We would see that get even worse because when OBGYNs cannot practice, they leave communities. Right? When they cannot practice their full range of skills, they leave. And they're not the only ones that leave. Other specialists leave behind them. So they want us to think the issue is just about abortion, but it's also about any type of specialty care that you might need, whether that's oncology, urology, pediatrics. You know, can you imagine living in a community where just for your child to get their childhood immunizations, you have to drive an hour, 2 hours to get that done?
Unbelievable.
Well, but you're, but see, if that came, if you're an attorney general and this program, which eventually, if everything is, if Trump gets elected, will come down to North Carolina. How
well,
would you, what would be the main presentation you would make to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so the attorney general is a is not a policymaker, so I wouldn't make
any
law.
So it would be the Solicitor General, right?
Yes, but the tool that the attorney general has, and it's a big tool, is litigation.
Right.
Is that you can sue on behalf of the people of North Carolina. This, you can sue the state of North Carolina, you can sue in federal courts. And one of the things that litigation helps you do is gives you time for the politics to change. So you can stop some of the most egregious things by suing, and the court will then, you know, sometimes pause those things from happening. You think about something like school desegregation, busing, all those things were litigated in the federal courts. The AG can continue to litigate those things in federal court instead of in state court. You can go around the state Supreme Court. Also, the other big stick that the attorney general has is the bully pulpit. Sometimes calling things out changes things, right? When you have when you have people at the table who are willing to say this is happening and this is wrong, then the people understand what's happening to them. Most people don't really even know what the attorney general does, but that's how they can impact their lives.
Well, there are so many things that would be presented to the state of North Carolina, and it couldn't be brought up by the judges. Somebody, some entity would have to come up and say, this is what they want, and present it as a change in the law. Is that correct?
Yes and no. The attorney general can say that the laws that either the General Assembly or the federal government have imposed upon the people of North Carolina are unconstitutional, either under the North Carolina Constitution or the Constitution of the United States.
Okay.
And go ahead.
The reason why, if we had the same position we have right now with a Democratic governor, and you got in as the attorney general, we would control three quarters of the state, correct? We'd have and everything you say the same. We don't control the Senate, and we don't control the House here in North Carolina. We control one-third of the government. So
it'd be one-third of the government.
How could you do anything to prevent this from happening?
Well, it's not so much that you can prevent it. Well, one, we hope that one of the things that we would do this year is work to elect different people to the General Assembly. And, you know, what I'm about to make is more of a political argument than a legal argument, is that we have to get out voters who are motivated in things being different. That means we have to get out black voters. We have to turn out women. We have to turn out. We have to turn out infrequent voters who say only vote every 4 years if they vote there.
Right.
Right. And those people are not motivated by voting against somebody, right? So they say, I'm not going to – they're not going to vote for Trump, but they may not come out at all. They might sit on the couch.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the real goal is to get – is to have a Democratic ticket that those infrequent voters see change in. They see people on that ticket who are offering them something different. Now, if they come out, then the legislature will also look different. Now, it still may be a majority Republican legislature, but they may not have
right.
a supermajority.
Okay,
and
but
if they don't have a supermajority.
Right, a supermajority, there's nothing really you can do.
Right, with a supermajority, we can just sue them. And you can sue them at every turn.
Right.
And that might not stop them, but it slows them down long enough for there to be another election cycle. It slows,
okay,
you know, brings attention to what they are doing. One of the things they don't like to do is have the moves that they're making exposed to the light.
Right. And what I'm saying is that if everything remains the same right now, Democrats control the governor's seat and the Senate, and the House stays the same with the Republicans, what can you actually do if this is presented to the House?
I can actually sue them. Now, I know that
you
doesn't sound like a lot, but that is
no,
a lot.
No, I understand.
That takes,
no, that's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. And that takes,
takes time.
Sorry about that. That's my dog. When you
that's
have
right.
a, when.
He's saying, yes, that's right. Stu.
That's right. That's right. That's the amen corner right there. They're saying it's doing. But there is a lot of power in litigation. But also there is when you have one with it is always you have the executive branch and the legislative branch kind of trying to or fighting each other over some of these issues, you get better issues. I mean, you get better policies,
mm-hmm.
right? Because then you have to negotiate, right? And
right.
negotiating. Hold on 1 second. And so we have to put ourselves in a situation where we are at least fighting some of this, some of these things, where they're not
right.
just able to roll over the people of North Carolina and just change the law so that they benefit their power and control.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but see, the thing is that people right now don't understand they have the vote to change most things. And they think, well, there's nothing we can do about it anyway. They control it. So we need, as you said, to get these people out to vote. The sometimes people, the people only vote when they're really upset because their next-door neighbor voting. And next door neighbor say, yeah, you got to get out. They don't understand why to get out and vote. They just need to get out and vote. So we need to get those people out.
How do we convince them that you as Attorney General have something to fight with if they have them behind them?
Well, the way I can, well, first of all, I am not what they're used to.
No, that's how many times have we had a woman district attorney in, attorney general in North Carolina? I don't remember ever.
Zero times.
Zero, that's
there
right.
There have been 100 attorneys general of North Carolina. And every
how
single
many black,
one of them.
How many black
zero.
Attorney generals?
Zero.
So
all 100 attorneys general of North Carolina.
Attorney general, then. You'd be the first.
That's correct. That'd be the first. I'd be the first. Not only would I be the first, there's never been anybody with a background like mine. There's certainly never been anybody.
That's why I wanted to take your time and explain it to people.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely correct.
Yeah, there's never been anybody who knows as much as I know about the law and has done as many things as I have done. Certainly not somebody who...
They've all been political leaders.
Say that again?
They've all been political leaders.
That's correct. They've all come out of the General Assembly, and they've all been focused on their own political careers as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that happens then is that when they sit down to negotiate, they're negotiating with their own political careers in front of them, right? So their positions they're not going to take, or, and this is what often happens, they negotiate the rights of the most vulnerable people in our community away. Whether those be women, children, people of color, people who are low income, people in rural communities, all of those people end up with their needs pushed aside. And what I am proposing to the people of North Carolina is that by electing me, they will elect somebody who understands what their everyday lives are like, right? Who has grown up in a rural community, who has had to take out student loans to go to school, right? And knows what happens when that happens. Somebody who has almost died in childbirth, so really understands the issues around maternal health and mortality. Someone whose own father died in a hospital because he could not get to a hospital that had the kind of care that he needed in time. Right? Somebody who has aunties and cousins and friends who get scam calls day and night trying to take their money, trying to take their homes, right? Somebody who has been a prosecutor in North Carolina, who has prosecuted some of the highest profile cases in North Carolina, who has run one of the largest offices in North Carolina, who has a background of managing multi-million-dollar agencies. Right. So I am somebody that the people of North Carolina who not only can trust is qualified, right, but can also trust that has their best interests at heart, that's not in it for the power and the control, or just because somebody decided to tap me on the head and say, okay, you get to be attorney general next while I go on to become
next.
And that,
this is a job that I actually want.
Well, you see, now the thing is that
most of these people who run for attorney general want to be governor next.
That's right. There's a joke that they call it, the AG means aspiring governor, not attorney general.
That's so true. Well, you know, the thing we have to understand, how do we get you out there to more people?
Well, I appreciate you having me on your show. We are trying to do as much of this type of thing as possible. We are on radio, we're on television, but it's going to be a ground game for us, Mike. We need people to tell their friends. One, I need people to go out and vote for me. Early voting's open till tomorrow, and then the primary's on Tuesday. And the polls be open, I think, from 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. So please go out and vote for me, and then tell all your people to vote for me. Get on your social media, tell people that you're voting for me. Share that with as many people as you can, because the other thing that people don't understand, if you wait till November, the choices have already been made for you.
Of course.
You don't get to choose who the nominee is. Now you're getting to choose who the nominee is. You're getting to choose who shows up on that ballot in November. And if you want somebody who represents your lived experience, your life here in North Carolina, I'm your candidate. But I need your help.
Mm-hmm. Well, have anybody in the Democratic machine voluntarily or specifically gone to help you?
Well, I have. That's a good question. And what I will say is that any of the organizations within the Democratic Party that are people-powered have endorsed me. So groups like the Young Democrats, the Progressive Caucus, the African American Caucus, any of those caucuses within the Democratic Party that endorse have endorsed me. Local organizations that are run by people have endorsed me. Mm-hmm. Now, what I haven't got are like the corporate endorsements, but that's okay. We know that, again.
Well, the corporate endorsements, therefore the what can I get out of it?
That's correct.
That's what
they're in for the money. They're in for the money.
Even though they might be Democrats, they're still in it for the money.
That's correct.
And most people who are working every day are not sitting by on their cell phones 24/7. Or not looking at the news 24/7, that want to come in and sit down, have a good dinner, watch some TV, laugh, cry or something, then go to bed, maybe listen to a little TV, go to bed, little news, they're not going to hear about you. Unless someone.
They'll hear about you.
Unless someone.
Unless somebody they trust. That's right. And most people, that's how they end up voting, right? Is they vote for some, because it's a very small number of people who tell a larger number of people who to vote for.
Right.
And people, when they hear it from somebody they trust, then they go out and do it. But they also have to want to vote for somebody. One of the things I hear a lot from people is they want somebody to vote for, not somebody to vote against.
Right. That is very true. And most people get tired of hearing the guy, old red face, get up there and tell you why you can't vote for Joe Biden. But he'll say, why do you vote for him? Does that?
Yeah, they don't want to hear, come out and save democracy, because a lot of them have heard that before. And we're still on the path that we're on. Mm-hmm. What they want to hear is hear somebody who – hear some things that will make your life better that I will do if you, with your help that we can do together.
That we can do together. Yeah, well, you see, now, what would you say about someone who says this and what – because he believes it. Now, what would be the thing – well, let me just play this. I want you to hear this.
Well, my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.
Now, what would you say about something like that?
I would say he's proven to be right, hasn't he?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that he, again, he is giving people something to vote for. Now, mm-hmm. whether we think that is a legitimate thing, and I really don't. Right? His people hear him yeah. saying he's standing up for them. And I feel like that is what we need to do better in the Democratic Party is say, here is what we have done.
Right.
And here is what we can continue to do. I think one of the things that we have been guilty of doing is trying to find candidates who don't stand for anything because we don't want people to say anything negative.
Absolutely.
But what this guy has shown us is that the more negative you talk about him, the more people think he's right for some
and,
people.
And for a lack of me, I can't figure out that reasoning.
Look, I think we can't. I don't think we can worry about trying to figure it out anymore. We just gotta bring candidates who stand for something too, and candidates who stand in opposition, not just in opposition to what he says. Not people who go out on the stump and say, "Oh, you gotta vote for me because it might be him." You gotta say, "You gotta vote for
Absolutely.
Me because me and you together." Build a better place to live. If I'm at the table, you're at the table. Then you can go to work and take care of your family and come home and have dinner and decompress and watch TV for a couple hours knowing that the person at the table has already heard from you and is moving forward in a way that is legitimate for you.
Mm-hmm.
And addresses your concerns, right? And that's the kind
Absolutely.
Of candidate I, you know, I propose to people that I am.
Well, I've never heard anybody run for office who speaks so passionately about the people that she wants to represent. And I want to think that this is the very first time that I've spoken to someone that passionately represents the people that he represents. And I think the people in Hamlet are going to be, I don't know, who would be the next DA when you become the Attorney General? What are they going to do down there in Hamlet?
Well, I'm in Durham. Look, they'll still have me. They'll still have me. I'll still be around.
That's right.
I just be doing a different job. But, you know, I love the people in North Carolina. And I'm not just saying that. Like, this is, I went from Hamlet to college at Princeton. And then I have a law degree and a business degree from Duke. I could be anywhere in the world. And I chose to be in North Carolina because I love it here. And I love the people. And
well, you know, what are people in Durham County going to do?
Well, the people of Durham County will also be fine because one of the things that I know as a leader is that we build as we climb. You've got to put in place the opportunity for other people to be successful. The success can't just depend on it just being your butt in those seats, right? There has to be, you have to build capacity in your community for there to be people who come up after you. And that's what I hope we have done here in Durham, not just in the office that I currently occupy, but in our community, that there are people in my office, that there are people in this community who can continue the work that I have done here while I go do other work.
Well, as district attorney in Durham County, you've done some things that have never been done before that I know of, with the pretrial incarcerations, how to improve that, and getting more equity in the courts. How can you take that and put that across as the Attorney General as the Attorney General for the state?
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I have learned is that you can make change. There are people out there who want to see things change, and all they need is the support to
do it for them.
Yeah, they need somebody they need somebody who is willing to show the political courage to show them that it can be done.
Right.
And that, I think, is another thing that I bring that people are not used to seeing lately, right, is some political courage. It's somebody who says,
that's for sure,
I don't care if you talk about me. this is what we're trying to do is what we think is right, and it's right for the people here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to step out on faith. And not even on faith. There's a lot of research. I'm not really guessing when I do stuff. Some of the stuff that we do in Durham County, we have decades of research about. We have collected data on. We know that it works. People have just not shown any courage to put it in place and continue to do it when they get criticized. People don't like to be criticized, right? Nobody likes anybody to say, oh, I don't like that you're doing that. And then people say, okay, wait, well, we'll back up. We'll back up. No, mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is build the beloved community, right, where everybody feels safe and everybody has the ability to thrive and become their best self. And, again, we only do that together, but somebody has to step out in front. And that's the particular skill set that I have, is I'm willing to step out in front. I can't do anything without people behind me. There's a lot of people behind me. There are literally hundreds of people in Durham County who have contributed to the success of the work that we do here. It is not about mm-hmm. me. I am one person with the same 24 hours a day that everybody else has. I actually might have a little bit fewer because I try to get to bed on time. Right? So... but if people think you will take a chance, they will follow it.
Absolutely. But then I need to have that person that will take the chance.
Yes.
Because most people don't like taking a chance.
No. Most people don't like taking chances, and they don't like change, even if it's good change.
No. They don't like change, right? That's really good.
They do like to see it.
Yeah, well, when they see it, especially when it helps them.
That's right.
I want to thank you for coming aboard my first show back, even though we had the problems with the Blog Talk here and the and my computer getting the sound up. It was there. It automatically went out. So I don't know what the story was. But how can people get a hold of you and vote for you? Where do they, and who do they contact?
They can go to my website, which is SatanaDBerry4NC.com, and they can sign up to work the polls on Tuesday if they want to. But they can also just go out to the polls tonight and vote. They can go tomorrow. Tomorrow's the last day of early voting. They can go out, I think, and vote until 3 o'clock tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then on Tuesday from 6:30 a.m. to 7:30, they can go to their regular polling place and vote. My name, again, is Satana DBerry. It will be the very first name that you see under Attorney General on the Democratic ballot.
So
if you are
the people who can call your office and contribute money or want to
go out
and
well, if they go to my website, if they go to my website, they can donate on my website. We still need money. We still got to get – we got to drive people out to the polls for Tuesday.
Right.
So we still got to be raising money this weekend, and we want to be – we want to make it past March 5th, and so we're going to need money past March 5th to get to November so people can do that. They can follow me on social media. They can Google me and follow me on social media. They can donate there. And tell your people, don't just go vote by yourself. Bring some people with you. Bring your mom and them, your spouse, your children of voting age. Y'all make a plan.
If you want change.
As part of your, that's right. If you want change. If you want to see something different, you have the power right now to get somebody different on that ballot in November.
And this is the first time, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time we're going to have a woman as Attorney General.
That's right. That's right.
And
there's
the
not even ever been a woman on the Democratic side
woman.
Who's ever filed. So.
Now, I just want to tell you, I want to tell you something, one thing. My mother was the smartest woman I ever met. And I happened to meet her because I was there when I was born. But anyway, she never was, well, she always was a good talker, but she was never involved in anything with political or any other party, but she all of a sudden, when she got into her 20s, she became a leader and went in New York, and she became the first black woman who was the head of the, which was then, it was called the Sanitation Department of New York, as in the accounting department. She never even took that up in school.
Hmm.
But she was a math genius. She could, you know, I remember back in the old days, we used to go to school, and after school, we'd meet at the grocery store, the local grocery store, and they didn't have computers that typed out what the price was, what you bought. The guy used to take a brown paper bag, and he'd write down on the paper bag, oh, this is $1.46, this is 46, and he'd write up, and she could add it up upside down from what he was writing. So she was a good, and she always said, and I believe it, a smart woman you never can beat.
That's right.
And she was absolutely right. So you are a smart woman. And I want to thank you very much for taking all this time on the show, and I want to make sure that I'm voting for you this, well, tomorrow I'm going to vote.
Yeah.
Let's go Friday. I want everybody else to go out and vote for it, too. Santana de Berry, everybody.
Thank you.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, that is it. Now, there is... there's something I wanted everybody to hear here. And this is from Steve Schmidt, former Republican. And this is what he says about the Republican Party.
Former Special Counsel Robert Mueller may soon finally testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee after he wrote a blistering op-ed in the Washington Post blasting President Trump's decision to commute the prison sentence for longtime friend and former campaign aide Roger Stone. The head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham, says he plans to call on Mueller to testify before the Senate panel. After shooting down a request last year by Senate Democrats for Mueller to testify, this is all happening after President Trump announced his very controversial decision to commute Stone's sentence late Friday. Stone, of course, was set to begin a 40-month prison term for lying to Congress during its investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election.
I will tell you this. People are extremely happy because in this country they want justice, and Roger Stone was not treated properly. So I'm very happy with what I did. I commuted his sentence.
He's very happy about it, but is anyone else? Joining us now, Joyce Vance, former U.S. attorney and professor at the University of Alabama School of Law, and Steve Schmidt, former Republican strategist. Steve, a very, very small group of Republicans blasted the president's decision. Mitt Romney, Pat Toomey. Where's everybody else?
Well, they're hiding. They're silent. They're afraid. They're terrified of being tweeted at. They are terrified of this president giving them a nickname. And so once again, we see this feckless, cowardly Republican majority in the Senate, Republican minority in the House, who won't stand up for the rule of law, won't stand up for the checks and balances, won't stand up for decency. The Secretary of Education can go on a television show and say that the loss of 0.2% of America's school children with about 15,000 American kids is acceptable casualty numbers. What we see in this administration is the stench, the rot, and Roger Stone is a nefarious character. He deserves to be in prison. He is a convicted felon. But, you know, at this point in the administration, we shouldn't be surprised at anything that Trump does, and we shouldn't be surprised at the total silence and complicity of his Republican enablers. The expectations are zero,
but
because
Steve,
that's what they've proved to do for these last years.
But Steve, why? Are Republican voters down with this?
I'm not a psychologist, Stephanie. I can't explain it. But in this hour of testing, when every American idea and ideal has been assaulted by this administration, when we've seen rampant corruption, we have an entire political class in this country that is scared to stand up and to do their duty to preserve and protect and steward the Constitution of the United States, to make the country a better place, to hand it off more a stronger country to our kids. I'm at a loss for it for years, but it's despicable. It's cowardly. When we look at the coronavirus response across the country, we see states, big states, mega states that could be nations unto themselves, Florida and Texas, led by abject fools that would be responsible for killing a lot of their citizens with the idiocy of the policies. It's just, it's a terrible time in the country with regard to our leaders. We have a leadership crisis. We have a courage crisis in the country. And it's too bad. And we see the damage that it's all done.
Joyce, on Twitter, you really dissected President Trump's letter where he announced the commutation. What stood out to you the most?
So I think the letter just piles awful on top of the commutation, which is bad enough, because Trump doubles down on why he commuted Roger Stone's sentence. And here's what sets this commutation apart from any other time a president of the United States has commuted a sentence for someone. It's that the president was limiting his own exposure, whether to criminal investigation or congressional oversight, by ensuring that Roger Stone would never testify about him. With this commutation, Stone will never spend a night in prison. There is no risk that he will cooperate with federal officials and tell them what he knows about Trump to save himself from going to prison. So in announcing this pardon, in decrying it as part of the Russia hoax, which we all know was not a hoax, Bob Mueller had two blockbuster indictments that displayed for everyone to see Russia's efforts to interfere in our election. Trump is continuing this litany that says that he is always the one who is done wrong by the criminal justice system. As the leader of that system, he should have ensured that Roger Stone went to prison. Trump yet again puts his own interests in front of those of the American people. And as Steve points out, that's no longer shocking. In fact, it's become normal. We would all be surprised if Trump put the country first.
Okay, then because of that, Steve, as foul as this is, could one actually look at this as a smart move by President Trump? Because since we've come to accept that this is who he is he really going to lose one single voter, one single supporter over commuting Roger Stone's sentence? Or would he be at risk of exposing a lot more if Roger Stone actually went to prison and turned on him?
Well, he loses voters every day just on the basis of the coronavirus death rate in the country. I don't know the answer to the question. I do know that his poll numbers are collapsing. I know they announced a multi-million dollar television advertising campaign that won't take place in the state of Michigan because that state is already lost to him. You look at the Senate races all across the country, Trumpism is in a lot of trouble as we head into an election in 113 days. But understand this, when we talk about Roger Stone, when we talk about all the degradations to our systems, his desecrations of his office, is that we live in a country where the world's leading infectious disease specialist, Dr. Anthony Fauci, has been silenced by the White House. And in fact, the White House is sending opposition research like he's an opponent, like he's a political opponent to news organizations to discredit him in the middle of the pandemic. When you process that, when you take it in, when you really just sit back and you think about that, the insanity that has been unleashed in this country over the last year by this president, by the foolishness that we see, and it doesn't matter whether it's coronavirus response, whether it's the assault on the rule of law, whether it is his betrayal of our men and women in harm's way in Afghanistan who have Russian bounties on their heads, he has refused to defend the country from hostile foreign powers. He has refused to do his duty. He has eviscerated the norms of the American presidency in a most tragic way. And what he has exposed is the rot and corruption of one of our two political parties in this country that have decided to join a cult of personality as opposed to being United States senators and members of Congress and standing up for their constituents and our system of government, the 244-year-old American experiment. It is a tragic hour in our land for sure.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want to keep up to date with the videos we're putting out, you can click subscribe just below me.
I wanted to play that to remind everybody what they're going to get with Donald Trump if he is in office, and you won't have an attorney general like Santana DeBarry who will be helping you through the darkness that this man creates. There won't be one single thing that your lawyer or any other lawyer in this state will be able to stop this megamaniac. So what I'm saying is make sure you at least put Santana DeBerry as the Attorney General when you go out to vote. Those that haven't voted already, it's time to do your duty. And I want to make sure that the people who want this country to succeed, elect Santana DeBerry as Attorney General for North Carolina. I want to thank everybody for listening. And all I can say is let Aretha Franklin take us out of here.
But my people are so smart. And you know what else they say about my people? The polls. They say, I have the most loyal people. Did you ever see that? Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay? It's like incredible.